All right, this last part, I just want to hit some language. I can't hit all the language. There's not enough agreement about what the damn language is, but I can make you suspicious. I can give you some ideas to think about. Experimenter, basically this whole thing is, who am I unhappy with? The researchers or the participants? Who do I think is screwing things up for me? So the difference, experiment expectancy is a kind of self-fulfilling prophecy. It's unintentionally producing the results you want. I'm not talking about fraud, lie, cheat, steal, none of that. I'm talking about the fact that sometimes we see what we want to see. Ask any fan. And there's been some fascinating stuff done with coaching and reffing. So we might modify the participants' behavior, or we might directly impact the data as they're collected. Both of those would count as self-fulfilling prophecy on the I'm now pissed at the experimenter side. When we talk about data collection, there's observer bias and interviewer bias. They mean the same thing from two different research areas. The observational people call it observation bias. The interview people call it interview bias. Both of it means that we are either changing the way the person responds or collecting the data in a way that isn't exactly right. Participant expectancy often goes under the category of demand characteristics. You are in a position of power. They want their credit, and more than anything else, they went out the door with their credit. And so there's a lot going on in there, and a lot of that allows you to modify their behavior. Social desirability means if they know what's expected of them, they might acquiesce to it. Or they might be ornery little shits and fight it. Either way, you're not getting the natural behavior. Remember some of that great social desirability work from the 50s, where people would say, that line's longer. Confederates, six or seven Confederates lined up in a row would say, that line's longer, and the whole time the person at the end, the only real participant in the room. Yeah, it's longer. Some great old video of that. Acquiescence, rejection. If they know what the goal is, they can decide whether to acquiesce or reject. So what we need is them to not know what the hell's going on. Again, on the participant side, we have reactivity and response bias. Both of these are, my behavior is not natural because I know somebody's watching. Whether it's observational or survey and self-report, I know somebody's watching. I'm going to react and respond in a way that I think is going to get me out the door unscathed. And so this is what you got to stop and ask yourself. Am I worried about the way the researchers interacted with the participants and if that created confounds and or bad measurement? And I need to worry about how the participants how the participants reacted to things. What we need is the participants to have nothing to react to, and the researchers, the people who are collecting and coding the data, to have no idea what the hell's going on. And that leads us to single and double blind procedures, which I'm sure you've heard before. In a single blind procedure, the participant does not know what the hell's going on. So they can't generate hypotheses, and they can't decide whether to acquiesce or reject. They can't decide how to modify their behavior. In a double-blind procedure, neither the participant nor the data collector, data coder. Notice, when you do this, you stop saying researcher, because somebody has to know what the hell's going on. But it shouldn't be the people collecting the data and coding the data. This gets really hard to do in a research laboratory because you're trying to train the people that are supposed to not know what's going on. And it's an ongoing challenge, particularly in observational research.